Hey, good morning. Well, excuse me, that didn't work out too well. Let's try that again. Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is the K-12 Education Talk Radio. It's the last Monday in March. How about that? Okay, so how do you hope you had a good Palm Sunday yesterday? Happy Easter next week. And today's the 25th of March. And we got Howie Knopf here. Dr. Howie is the president of Project Achieve Educational Solutions. He's calling in from Fort Myers, Florida. He's a consultant to schools. He's been with us 2,000 times. We always have him on. Today he's going to be talking about how cognitive biases disrupt educators' student perceptions and their decisions about themselves and their students. Okay, it's interesting, cognitive biases, and we're going to find out everything about it. We'll archive the show over at ace-ed.org, and go over there. You'll see that's our home website for the American Consortium for Equity in Education, which we're very proud of. Our magazine's over there, all the podcasts, the information about the Equity Awards for pre-K-12, et cetera, et cetera. And I remind you, everything's free over there. Go over, check it out. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors. We're proud of what we do, and we still work for equity every day here at the American Consortium for Equity in Education, ace-ed.org. Okay, I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Howie Knopf. Good morning, Howie.
Well, good morning, Larry. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I know you didn't have it in Fort Myers, Florida, but up here we had about a foot and a half of snow on Saturday in a freak snowstorm.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you, buddy. I won't tell you what a
beautiful day it is here in Florida.
Well, it's going to be a beautiful day here. We're just, for some reason, have piles of snow again when all of it was melted. It's good to talk to you, Howie. Okay, and I hope everything's going great down there. And real quick, just tell us about Project Achieve before we get into cognitive biases.
Okay. Well, Project Achieve is... it's a school improvement process that's evidence-based.
Like that.
I'm sorry?
I like that description right off the bat. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've been doing it now since about 1990. It's evidence-based. Originally, it was evidence-based through the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services because it has as its foundation kind of school psychological processes. But we focus on strategic planning. We focus on professional development, looking at academic instruction all the way out to the multi-tiers for the students that need more strategic or intensive services. We kind of couple that with the social, emotional, and behavioral area because obviously they're interdependent. And what we try to do is to maximize the academic, social, emotional, behavioral outcomes of all students, each of them as individuals, but all of them collectively. So I consult all over the country and have consulted.
Yes, you do.
Many times I help school districts to get U.S. Department of Education grants so that we can implement things for 5 years and really make sure that they have the opportunity to sustain themselves. But everything I do is research-based and field-proven. So we're not making it up as we go along. We're really looking at the situations that schools are confronted with and try to maximize the outcomes or facilitate the change to get the outcomes that we all want.
That was a great description. Thank you, Howie. And I have Project Achieve linked right here on site as you're listening to the show. Howie knows what he's doing. He's been on the show how many times? 2,000 times, and we love having you on. You always bring great – I'm serious. And you've always been great, not to 2,000, but a lot. And you've always been brought great information to us, Howie. And today, thank you for that description, biases. Okay? And first of all, let's define that. What is a cognitive bias, and how does it affect all that we do? Well, I think I know the answer, but I want you to do it, Mr. Psychologist. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I mean, it does affect.
Excuse me. Dr. Psychologist. Dr. Howie Knopf. Excuse me. Yeah, go ahead, Howie.
Well, biases, cognitive biases, they do affect everything we do in terms of the things that we select, the things that we selectively hear, how we form our opinions, and so on. But, I mean, putting it into a school context, I want your listeners to think about, you know, maybe administrators and how they make decisions or how they hire people or how they put people into groups or teams or grade levels or instructional units. I want you to think about teachers and how they interact with the students, the children and adolescents in their classrooms, how they select curriculum materials, how they organize their instruction. And then think about the students and how they organize themselves, whether that's into groups or cliques, you know, how they work together in teams in the classroom, the attitudes that they bring to the table. And that kind of brings in that a lot of times our students are a reflection of either their parents or the community or the culture. All right, so that is a backdrop. A cognitive bias is a way of thinking, but it's a systematic error in how people think. It's a bias, but it affects how kids or teachers or adults, administrators, how they process information, how they perceive others, and how they make decisions. Now, a lot of times these biases are unconscious. All right, and they're automatic, and they're built up through experience. But again, the experience could be personal experience, but it also could be the impact of history or the impact of the media. And what happens is that sometimes these unconscious biases, again, these biases affect us in negative or inappropriate ways in terms of how we perceive others or the decisions that we make.
How does it affect what we do as teachers? And I think it affects it two ways, Howie. Okay. I think it affects the way we look at students. And you made an example, you put it on the sheet I'm using, okay, as we prepared for the show. You know, I taught you a quote, I taught your brother, he was terrific, I'm sure you are too. Or the opposite, I taught your sister, and she was just a terrible disciplinary problem. I hope you're not the same, Suzanne. Okay. That's a bias you're bringing right in, okay? But that affects the students, okay? But I also think our biases, if you are teaching a group, okay, and you built up a bias with that group, okay, you're not going to like your job very much, and you're not going to be a very effective teacher, okay? And I think the cognitive biases affect the teacher, and I think they affect the student. Am I right?
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, when we look at the psychological research, there are hundreds of different biases. You know, there are overlaps between many of them. And you know, you don't want to start splitting hairs. I mean, I'll give you a couple of examples as you go along.
Ahead.
But you just hit a couple of really good examples. But let me kind of add on a layer before we
start into the
examples. All right. So we've got cognitive bias, but we've got also conscious or explicit bias as a subset, and then unconscious or implicit bias as a subset. So sometimes, you know, I mean, we're aware of the biases, or we can become aware of the biases. Other times, they're more unconscious, they're implicit, and we really haven't thought them through. We don't really know their origins. We know that they may or may not affect us, but again, they've got to be called to our attention. So for example, you know, using the older brother or sister, that's a prime example of, you know, and we can categorize it as a certain type of bias, but it depends on what happens. But I mean, walking in, if, you know, we had an older brother who was a pain in the butt, shall we say, for a teacher
or a teaching
team. So what's happening is that because of their experiences with the older brother and sister, they are automatically sometimes biased toward the little brother or the little sister. And as soon as they see them coming or they see the parent coming, and again, we can talk about parent bias from previous examples of that people have with certain groups of parents or whatever. Okay. But we see the little brother or little sister coming, and sometimes again, the teachers, they're already, and again, could be conscious, it could be explicit. You know, they're sitting there saying, oh no, here we go again. But then what the critical point is that impacts sometimes not just their attitudes and their beliefs, their attributions, but it also sometimes it affects their behavior. So how welcoming they are with that little brother or sister. So they play out the bias. And then sometimes what happens is they get what they expected, but it's because of the interaction. So they get what they expected.
It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy almost.
Exactly. And technically, some psychologists would say, all right, that's a confirmation bias. Because what you had before, you know, your existing belief, now as you are interacting in real life with that little brother or sister, again, staying with our example, when their behavior is inappropriate as a response to you, you don't necessarily look at it as, all right, well, I triggered that inappropriate behavior.
Right.
It just confirms your original bias from the older brother and sister.
You know, that this is all very, very interesting because, it like I said, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, okay? But it's hard for, quote, you, the generic you, to see it, okay? And you brought up something interesting about explicit bias, and I'm just thinking of racism. And there are teachers, I guess, who are racist, okay? I hope there's very, very few, okay? But a racist person obviously is a biased person, but they don't – do they see themselves as biased, Howie? They justify it and say, no, I'm not biased. This is proven. I'm correct, okay? You know what I mean?
I mean, some do see the bias in themselves and actually celebrate it.
Yeah.
Others don't necessarily see how it's impacting them. I mean, and in a sense, and again, there's overlaps between these. I mean, you're talking about, let's just say, a bias that we would also or could frame as a prejudice. And as a prejudice, I mean, take it literally, prejudge. You are prejudging or forming an opinion about somebody before you have all of the facts on them as an individual. And so, you overgeneralize, and that certainly is a type of bias. And then it's what you do with it. Because, again, if they start behaving in a way that conforms to your bias, that strengthens your bias, you confirm it and so on. But if, for example, they don't conform to your bias, then that creates a dissonance, and you've got to figure out, well, what do I do with that? And, you know, simplistically with that dissonance, you've got information that just doesn't fit what the bias was. Sometimes what that does is it makes you more aware of the bias and you basically do a gut check. Sometimes what the dissonance does is you double down on the bias and say, all right, well, you know, the kid was just had a good day. And it's going to be 1 in 100 days, and you discount the information that actually is contrary to your belief.
Wow, it's just amazing. And Howie, you also had something here which I love. You called it on our sheet, self-serving bias. We're going to go down ways Howie fixes all this or helps to fix it. But self-serving bias, and I love the way you explained this. When educators quote take credit for their positive accomplishments, I love this, but blame, quote, uncontrollable, end quote, factors for their negative outcomes, okay, which is also something called human nature, okay? Obviously, the good stuff is me, and just ask any president. The good stuff is me, and the bad stuff is the other guy, okay? Okay, the uncontrollable factors. To talk about that for a sec, that's really, it just struck me as fun. And it struck me as interesting, and it struck me as the typical conversation in the faculty room. Okay, just talk about that. What do you see when you go into school and hear this? That one I loved. Yeah, go ahead. Take credit for the positive and blame the other stuff on uncontrollable. Go ahead.
All right. So let's shift. And again, I don't want this conversation to be a negative conversation. I mean, we're just.
No, because we're
going to
talk about what you do when you – these things are – no, let me just put that into perspective. Thank you. These things are there. They can be there, okay?
Right.
And you know your stuff. You're a school psychologist, and what we're going to talk about in a few minutes, okay, how you go in and help people correct this. So it's going to be very positive, but I just want to go down this because I want to make people aware of this. I just thought it was something that you had a name for that is very much human nature. Go ahead. Self-serving bias.
Right.
Howie.
All right, so I want to do this kind of on two levels, but let me start with, all right, and let's talk about administrators. And we all
okay.
we all know the pressure. You know, the big pressure is to make sure that our kids are graduating from high school, that they're scoring well on the state benchmark standards, proficiency tests, and so on and so forth. All right, so a self-serving bias might be the administrator where, and of course this has never happened to me, where I go in as a consultant, okay,
yeah.
and I look at the school, and I'm listening to the kids, and I'm listening to the parents, and I'm listening to the teachers. And the place is a mess, okay? It's a dysfunctional school,
yeah.
Okay? But what happens is that the kids keep scoring well on the state proficiency test. And so when you talk to the administrator doesn't want to look at the dysfunction. He or she is saying, but wait a minute. Look at the test scores, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I am doing a great job because if I were not doing a great job in this school, our kids would not have great test scores. All right, and then the second layer is the superintendent who hired the principal. And again, doesn't want to necessarily attend to the constructive feedback that he or she is getting from the community, from the kids, from the teaching staff, and simply says, look, I made the selection, and look, the test scores are out the roof. So I obviously made a great decision.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So, yeah. You know, and again, I mean, you know, the implicit point is that you can't evaluate anything in education based on one statistic or outcome or a result. And just because you've got great test scores, that could easily be that you've got a bunch of great kids who study hard, who want to prepare for their future, and they're able to basically push all the noise away and all the dysfunction away and focus in, you know, when we come to test time or when we come to, you know, class time. So, I mean,
hey,
how,
I got to ask you something. Have you ever been to a school like that where the school's kind of out of control, the school culture is bad, the way I'm going the way you're describing it, but the test scores are really good? Have you been to a school like that?
Well, if I were going to be honest, of course.
So, well, talk
yes.
about that's actually interesting. Okay, I don't even know how that could happen. For goodness' sake, the school's out of control, but the test scores are good. What's wrong with that picture, Howie?
Well, you know, I mean, it's a continuation of really what I just described. Sometimes what happens is you've got really capable students and really capable teachers, and they're able to push the noise aside. Once the classroom door shut, it becomes an oasis. And so they're able to kind of, you know, shield themselves from the craziness and be able to focus in. But again, it's not that they're not emotionally impacted. I mean, there is.
Yeah.
There's that climate issue. There's, you know, all of that
yeah.
cultural with a little
yeah.
C issue. So, I mean, they're many times aware, but they are able to keep the noise out, or they redouble their efforts and they circle the wagons and say, all right, look, we just got to focus on what we need to be able to control in this classroom, and that's our success. And so, now again, I don't want to stereotype, but
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
the stereotype in this scenario is really the schools that are the ones that have the resources, the schools that have the teachers who can circle the wagons and really focus in on the reality of this is what we've got to do in the classroom versus this is what I have to deal with when I go down to the administrator's office. So, you know, does this happen in the inner city or in schools of poverty? Absolutely. Does it happen as much sometimes as in, you know, the schools that have more resources? For me, not so much. But again, that could be a bias. That could be my bias.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And actually, the biases that everybody knows, that they're everywhere. I mean, everybody has certain biases. Okay, whether you like it or not, we do. Okay? And, you know, you try not to, but you do. And this is what I want to ask. Howie, Project Achieve, you go in there. They're not calling you in. I don't think they're calling you in because of this. But I think you see it once you're there. All right? And I may be wrong on that. You can explain that. But what do you do? That when you go in and see something like this, and how do you work with teachers? How do you work with the administration to make things better? And maybe you work with the parents too. But the thing is, you want to make people aware of this. You don't want to castigate them, but you want them to be aware of it. Just talk about that, Howie. What's the and again, I'm going to use the word. What's the solution to all this, or at least the steps to a solution?
Well, you know, there are a couple of steps. Probably the first biggest step, and it's not really a step. It's about forming positive relationships with people. I mean, you know, it's getting a track record. It's them knowing you, understanding where you're coming from, building in, you know, the relationship so that you're listening to them. And it's interesting because, speaking of bias, for me, as an outside person, I walk in and there are any number of different assorted biases that people have of me walking in as a consultant. And I've got to be very mindful of that. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I could have a, if you will, a positive bias. It's still a cognitive bias. So people may be impressed by my record, by what Project Achieve has accomplished, by my research and writings and the books, and or the fact that I'm a doctor, so there could be that positive bias, that, you know, that kind of expert bias. But also there could be the negative bias where I'm walking in and people say, well, this guy doesn't know us.
That's
he's
right.
From Florida. I mean, geez. I mean, he's retired. He's got a lot of money and all. He's going to come in and tell us what to do in rural Iowa. Or the bias could be where they come in and they say, ah, all right, here's this consultant. He's an agent of the administration.
Right.
He's coming in. Okay. So you've got all of that. So answering your question again. And sometimes I don't have enough time to be able to do it because I'm bounded by the contract in as a consultant, but building the relationships. But that means coming in and sometimes, you know, or many times not starting. This is not like the workshop kind of consultation. This is, I'm here to try to really facilitate change to bring you to the next level of excellence. And it's not a tactic. I really believe that, okay?
I know you do.
I mean, how I frame things, you know, in my first introduction to the entire staff, okay, is I want to see the things that you're doing that are great. We need to maintain and extend them. We've got to look at the things that are not working and potentially think about losing those because they're not helping or they're actually undermining our success. And we've got to look at the gaps and what we need to do to fill the gaps. But we need to bring this school, this district, up to the next level of excellence. Okay, and that's kind of the mindset. But building that relationship becomes really important. Listening to the different constituencies and listening to their history, listening to their biases, listening to, you know, the realities of what they've experienced. And again, we could be talking about me listening to a group of high school students, which I do all the time in a focus group. You know, high school students on what's working here in your high school, what are the gaps that you have, listening to teachers who are in a curriculum selection group. Okay, where they have to choose the next 6 or 7 years literacy program. Listening to the special ed teachers who are sitting there and saying, you know, we get dumped on all the time, and, you know, the general ed teachers just simply want us to take the kids away, but we've got a mandate to do inclusion with the kids who have got different disabilities. So listening and understanding, and you know, not necessarily judging, okay, but really hearing where they're coming from, what's been happening, and so on and so forth. But getting all of that, Larry, to the point where you can present information where it can be heard and acted upon. And that's really sometimes a major big step because, again, the biases are still sometimes there. And, you know, people don't – they don't want to change. They don't want to hear that there might be a better mousetrap. But, again, the relationship facilitates that. And then you're really working the relationship with, hopefully, the objective facts of the situation and where you need to bring – the staff or the kids or the administration to the next level of excellence.
And I like that. And you said something that struck me, Howie. You said that you are listening to their biases. Okay. Are they aware of their biases? Or are you picking it up as you're listening? And they're just kind of asking the right questions to bring them to an awareness. And that struck me because most people who have a bias don't even know it. Okay, or they laugh it off, so to speak. With the, you know, I taught your big brother; he was a good kid too. Okay, you know, when you say listening to their biases, how do you do that?
Well, you know, you're listening, and you're hopefully, you know, you're asking for clarification. You're asking questions to understand where, you know, what the history is or what the experiences were that or just reality checking with them. I mean, I'll give you an example. Here's one close to your heart. Okay. So if I'm working with a school district and they're looking at their social emotional learning program. Okay. And so, you know, there could be any number of different biases that people have formed just about social emotional learning. I mean, you know, we know from some of the surveys that parents don't like that term.
Yep.
But the reality is that parents, administrators, teachers, many times they don't understand the term. They don't understand what it is. I mean, social emotional learning.
You're right.
It's like, well, it's like it has become a living, breathing, working thing. But it's in the eye of the beholder. Social emotional learning is just a classification of a wide assortment of different strategies and approaches and curricula and programs.
That's right.
And yet what happens is that people have the bias on the term. Okay?
Exactly.
And
Thank you.
And again, we do this all the time, you know, the term, well, you're going to have a student with a disability in your classroom, and the term disability, and teachers don't think necessarily, well, and I'm being a little technical here, but, you know, the federal government, the Individual for Disabilities Education Act, there are 13 different disabilities, and yet the term becomes the biasing kind of element. And again, the same thing, social emotional learning. So what I'm trying to do when I'm listening to people, I'm saying, all right, give me a sense of how do you define social emotional learning? Give me some examples of what you think are social emotional learning strategies or curricula or whatever. You know, we've got research, again, not to dive into the social emotional learning, but supposedly somewhere about 95% of administrators said that they're doing social emotional learning in their school. But that's their definition of social emotional learning. For me as a psychologist, as a school psychologist, sometimes half of what they're talking about is social emotional learning. It's not. Okay, it's relationship building, but it's just we've thrown everything into this vat, you know. And again, I've got to do is I've got to help people to understand, in my example here, what social emotional learning is, what the research to practice is, what the elements are, what the outcomes are, you know. So it's listening, but getting to the point where you can ask questions that are helping people to pivot. And you're trying, and it's not a manipulation, you're trying to not create so much
dissonance. Not a manipulation.
that you that it shuts down. It's facilitating change.
Exactly.
And that's really what it is.
I told you my story. I'm pretty sure I told you, but I'm going to tell it again because I love it. One of the school districts I had on the show had a terrible natural disaster, a flood. And they wanted to put in social emotional learning, and the very conservative community didn't like it, and they fought against it. And we were talking about it. I said, well, why don't you just call – this is exactly what you just said. Why don't you just call it something else? Call it – I just found some curriculum on flood relief education. And the guy did that, and it worked fine. It was the same damn thing. Okay, you just give it a different name and make people feel good because they were biased against. And again, it was back when a couple of years ago when social emotional learning was politically unclear. All right, and I'll say it that way nicely. And we just got to do it. And you said it and again, 95% of schools are doing it anyway. Okay, it doesn't need a name. It doesn't need a name, you know? And Howie, I just want to ask you, as we got to wind down in just a couple of minutes here, okay? When you go in, okay, and Project Achieve, you go in and you do this, okay? Have you made really concrete positive moves towards a more successful school with all this when people are aware of their biases, okay? And again, that is so hard to do. What's been the – I'm going to ask you a funny question. I know it's going to be a good answer. The track record of what you're doing with this. Can we overcome this with the right thoughts about it?
Well, the short answer is yes. I mean, I'm not going to put myself on a pedestal, but I mean –
Do it. You can.
I've had some significant successes in my 40-year career. I mean, when I say, Project Achieve is evidence-based, I mean, this goes back in the years where the federal government would objectively evaluate the data and the outcome of programs like mine and make a decision that this program, it's not the program developer. It's not the testimonials. The data demonstrate that this program has objective social, emotional, behavioral, academic outcomes for all kids. Okay, so when Project Achieve was evaluated by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I sent them portfolios of schools across the country and the data and outcomes that we were able to accomplish. And again, it was a we. It wasn't me. It was the teachers. It was the kids.
Exactly.
It was the staff.
It was you facilitating it.
Right.
But you gotta get them thinking about it. It's a process, et cetera. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Right.
Howie, we got to go, okay? This was great. I have Project Achieve linked here. And if you haven't talked to Howie, get in touch, okay? It's good stuff. Howie, my man, you are always welcome here. You know that. And I thank you, sir.
All right. Love the time that I always spend with you.
And back at you on that one, okay? Thanks, Howie. Okay, got it all linked in. Have a good one. Enjoy that nice weather down there.
All right, take care. Dig yourself out.
You too, buddy. Bye-bye.
All right.
Yeah, good man. Okay, Howie Knopf, Project Achieve, it's linked. And what he does is really good work, and it's really important. And we'll archive at ace-ed.org. Check it out. Hey, thanks for listening. I'm Larry Jacobs, Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Last Monday of March.